Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing. Always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/truetransparencypricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Talking about your favorite teams as you kick off your day. This is the Wake Up Zone, powered by the Tennessee Lottery, with Mark Howard, Blaine Bishop, and Kevin Ingram.
The Zone, the Wake Up Zone. We are powered by the Tennessee Lottery, proud to have raised more than $5 billion for education. Alongside Mark Howard and Blaine Bishop, I'm Kevin Ingram, Jonathan Schaefer, our producer. Another of our favorite segments every week is when we get to speak with the Hall of Famer, Jason Stark, from the MLB Network and The Athletic. He is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com, get a guaranteed offer on your home today. Jason, what's going on this morning?
Kevin, what's happening, man? How are you?
I'm good. Anyway, we've seen a lot of players in this area and around the country, of course, go in the MLB draft. How do teams, you think, view college players, especially those that play at a high level, as maybe compared to how they looked at them in years past?
You know, I think we've been heading in this direction for a while, but college position players are the most projectable players in the whole draft. They're the safest picks. They're the most finished products. And I think we really saw that this year, especially. Six of the top 10 picks, I think it was, were college position players. Almost half the first round was made up of college position players. We only had one college pitcher go on the top 10 picks. And so I think that tells you something, too. Philosophically, I think we're seeing a shift toward the college position player as the best possible pick, unless you've got a really special arm, and never more than this year.
So where Bruce Bochy won his 1,000th game as manager of the San Francisco Giants. He is where you go from young players to guys who have been around forever. He always seems to me like he's one of the good guys in the game. I've known people who have covered him at different stops and said they really enjoyed the time they spent around him. What's your experience been like there with Bochy?
Yeah, I love that guy. And, you know, I've lots of great memories of being around those Giant teams that won the three World Series. But I think my favorite Bruce Bochy memory, actually, is last year, Hall of Fame induction weekend, Trevor Hoffman's day to get inducted. Look up on induction Sunday, and there was Bruce Bochy in Cooperstown after a night game in San Francisco the night before. And he found, Cooperstown is one of those places you can't get there from anywhere.
Right.
But he wanted to be there for Trevor Hoffman. He talked about it with ownership and his GM, and they said, yeah, do it. And so he found a way to fly all night, get some transportation all the way to Cooperstown because he wanted to be there for Trevor Hoffman. And it's good that he learned the way because he's going to be there getting honored himself for real soon.
Yeah, it won't be very long. When I look at the standings, a stat that I always think is interesting is looking at run differential and how it looks for different teams. Even last place teams, you can see, have a positive run differential. How do you look at that stat and its real meaning when, you know, teams can stack up a bunch of runs, you know, in say one series or against a certain opponent, and it really maybe skews how they do against everybody else?
Yeah, I think it's a meaningful stat to a point. Obviously, the earlier it is in the year, the more misleading that stat can be because – you just said a couple of blowouts either way can really skew it. I also think it tells you more about what's likely to happen than what's already happened, and I think a lot of teams use it that way. But can it be misleading? It obviously is. Just look at this year. The Reds have a better run differential than the Brewers. The Royals have a better run differential than the Pirates. Does that tell us much about those two teams? Maybe it tells us about where they're going, but I don't think so.
Yeah, you know, and in the case of the Reds, they did it all in a couple of different series where they scored a ton of runs, and then that's part of the reason the run differential looks like it does.
Right.
Visiting with Jason Stark from the MLB Network and The Athletic.
Jason, man, though, the horrific event to the young girl there, hitting by the ball, you know, it's interesting that they haven't made any netting changes. Do you think they will eventually at some point, maybe after the season, or you think they'll just stay with the netting that is in place now?
Blaine, I hope so. This has been a frustrating issue for a lot of people.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, one of the tricky things about it is there are legal ramifications. You'll notice that Major League Baseball has never required any team to do anything. It's just recommended that teams extend netting a couple of different times. And I think that's to guard against being sued. So there is that aspect to it. There's also a vociferous but small percentage of season ticket holders who complain about sitting behind netting. But come on. Why did we have to wait for these awful events for a little kid to be hit by a ball and injured badly before something happens? They've done massive studies on this, and they know exactly what the dangers are in every part of the park. You can extend netting and not extend it all the way up from the field to the second deck. You don't need to do that down the lines. You need to do that closer to home plate, and that's what needs to happen. The other thing that people always seem to forget is that, you know, just the quality of netting, the fibers, the look is so much different than even 10 years ago. It's not an obstruction. I've sat behind netting. I don't even notice it anymore. And safety has to come first. I hope that is the mantra, and I hope something changes.
Speaking of Jason Stark, of course, of The Athletic, Jason, what about the Dodgers, Hyunjin Ryu? Doesn't do any throwing of any kind between starts. Wants to save his bullets. How unusual is that?
It's really unusual. And I give the Dodgers a lot of credit, Mark, because they've never forced him to alter a routine that has worked for him pretty much his whole career. You know, once upon a time, he had really serious shoulder surgery, and so his thing is rest and recovery as opposed to the routines that other people go through. I don't know how you can argue. The guy's been amazing. He commands five pitches like nobody I've ever seen. It's incredible. And then what he's done since we clicked into May is just, it's crazy. Last six starts, he's given up two runs, both of them in one inning. So he's allowed a run in one of his last 51 and two-thirds innings. Would you mess with the routine of a guy like that?
I would not. All right, what about the killer Ks, Keuchel and Kimbrel? Who finds a home first?
I think Dallas Keuchel is... all signs point toward him signing with the Yankees, I think, by the end of the week. Craig Kimbrel, still looking for 3 years. I've been thinking Twins on him. I know the Cubs have a late-breaking interest, and I think his preference would be to go there. So let's see how this develops. It's just amazing to me that the draft pick compensation expired as of midnight, Sunday night into Monday morning. It amazes me that both guys didn't sign on 12:01 a.m.
I thought that was going to be the case, too. What about the Braves, Mike Soroka, and the incredible start he's off to?
you know, baseball is amazing. He's off to a better start than Maddox, Glavine, or Smoltz ever got off to in any season of their careers. Try to digest that. Now, I understand part of it is, look, there's a reason he doesn't give up two runs. He gets taken out of the game before he gives up the second run. And they stayed in. But this is what the Braves have been waiting for. Just that, you know, I had to wait for him to get healthy. But he's special. I think there's some debate in the sport about whether he's a quote-unquote true ace. But if he's a 1A or a 2 who gives you this kind of consistency, you're going to win a lot of games. And you're gonna play a lot of postseason games if he's on your team.
You did your column was really interesting, you know, talking about the month of May, 10 things And one of them was Christian Yelich is off to one of the best starts ever by an MVP, and he won't even win again. And one of the guys, you know, I know everybody's going to talk about Bellinger, but what about Josh Bell and his emergence and how, you know, he's just making more contact?
Yeah, that's all it ever took. You know, we had a debate on my podcast with Doug Glanville yesterday about whether Christian Yelich, having one of the great starts ever by a reigning MVP, would get a first place vote this year, and would he even finish second right now? Because there's such a great case for Josh Bell. Nolan Arenado is actually having his best season ever. This is going to be a fun MVP race. And it's funny, after I wrote that column, I heard from more Pirates fans than just about anybody about anything, because they thought that I was slighting Josh Bell by just concentrating on Bellinger and Yelich. But, you know, I guess I should have done an 11 things we learned in May instead of 10.
And finally, Gary Sanchez, the Yankees, I know, were rumored to have put him on the trade block in the offseason, but Brian Cashman totally dispelled that. This year, making more contact at the plate and catching the ball better behind the plate, it looks like he's done a complete 180.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. He was never available. You know, there were rumors he was going to get traded for JT Realmuto. Yeah. They were never doing that. You know, there's this, we rush to judgment on young players all the time. And Gary Sanchez is an example of what can happen if you just show a little patience. He's so much better behind the plate than he was last year, but the changes he's made at the plate, major change in launch angle since last year. He's got the fourth most extreme launch angle in baseball. You combine that with his bat speed, and you can understand why he's leading the league in homers. There's almost nobody in the game who hits the ball harder. Second in the major leagues in percentage of barrels per batted ball. And he kills the fastball, slugging almost 900 against fastballs this year. And, I mean, all those great hitters in that lineup, even after Judge and Stanton return, he might be the most feared the way he's swinging the bat right now.
Jason, great as always. Thank you.
Enjoyed it, man. Thanks.
All right, we'll see you later. Jason Start from The Athletic and the MLB Network in his podcast, Startville. As we like to call it, Stark Vegas. All right, more Wake Up Zone on the way. We're powered by the Tennessee Lottery, including the Predators trying to fix the power play, and Mark, his own story on a certain website. We'll tell you about that, too, when we come back. Wake Up Zone, we continue after this here on The Zone.